Tehran urging the U.S. president to stop meddling in its affairs in reaction to Biden's comments on recent riots in Iran. Ukrainian missiles land on a new target in Donetsk. Plus, Chinese president doubles down on peaceful reunification with Taiwan, but hints at Beijing having to use force if necessary. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Our top story this hour, Iran's foreign ministry reacting to comments made by the U.S. president over the wave of riots in the country, calling them meddlesome. The ministry's spokesman says that Joe Biden is supporting rioters in the tradition of American officials, a move that he described as fishing in troubled waters. Nasser Kanani says that Biden is frustrated by years of futile actions against Iran, adding that his interventions and expressions of surprise won't weaken the country's resolve. Biden has called the Iranian government oppressive, expressing surprise at, using his own words, the courage of people and women taken to the streets. Kanani also stressed that Iran is strong enough not to give in to brutal sanctions and hollow threats. He said Iranians will stand up for their independence and join together to heal wounds to inflict another defeat on Washington. Now, Tim Anderson is the director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, and he tells us how different U.S. administrations have done all they could to weaken Iran.
I think it's very well known by now that Washington, whatever the administration is there, whether it's Obama or Trump or Biden, is going to use all of the resources at their disposal to try and weaken, divide, undermine Iran. And every new opportunity will be seized on, basically, because, of course, we know their style of warfare these days is a lot more to do with using proxies, the proxies like the MEK, like the proxies that are in the northern Iraq, like the proxies that are used against Syria, for example, and a constant stream of propaganda to weaken or to confuse their own audiences, principally, basically. I don't think that's really confusing the Iranians, though. It's a long-standing practice of the U.S., and it's emerged in public, and they're not even embarrassed to say it now. They want to starve people, make them desperate, make them rise up against the government, because they know, as they said about Cuba 60 years ago, they said they knew that the Fidel Castro was very popular. The only way for them to try and overthrow the regime there was to make the people desperate and starve. And similarly, you recall Mike Pompeo a few years ago saying that if the Iranian people wanted to eat, they would have to comply with U.S. demand. So it's a very open, direct assault. Of course, it's illegal. It shouldn't be called sanctions. These coercive measures are illegal measures under international law, but they are specifically designed to make people desperate and try and divide people.
An investigative report by the Iranian parliament has concluded that the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was not due to assault and battery. The young woman was reportedly assaulted neither during her transfer to the police station nor while being held there. The findings, however, questioned the effectiveness of the first medical response she received. The report says the crowd amassing outside the police station delayed her transfer to the hospital. Parliament report has called on those who jumped to conclusions about a cause of Amini's death to correct their position or face prosecution. It says that the U.S., Israel, and their followers took advantage of such hasty judgments to stir up unrest. Days ago, the Iranian coroner's office also announced that Amini's death was not due to blows to her head or any of her vital organs. It was due to cerebral hypoxia and multiple organ failure. Amini died after 3 days in intensive care. Her death triggered a wave of riots in Iran. The Iranian judiciary says that four inmates have died of smoke inhalation in a blaze that occurred at Tehran's Evin prison. According to judicial officials, the four victims were serving time for theft. 61 prisoners were injured, while 70 others were rescued when the fire broke out late on Saturday. 51 received outpatient treatment. 10 others are in hospital, 4 in critical condition. According to officials, the blaze started at the prison's sewing workshop after a number of prisoners got into a fight. Meantime, security forces say that they prevented an attempted jailbreak by some of the inmates serving time for violent crimes. The situation at the penitentiary has returned to normal. The Ukrainian military has launched attacks on an administrative building in the eastern city of Donetsk. Officials in the Russian-held region say that 4 people have been wounded. Here's our correspondent, Jana Miller from Donetsk, explaining why this new escalation is important.
Now, all morning, the center of Donetsk has been hit by Ukrainian artillery. You can hear the sound of explosions across the city. And this strike here is perhaps the most important strike of this morning. It's the central administration building for the city of Donetsk. Now, of course, Ukraine has been shelling Donetsk for months now, indeed intermittently for the last 8 years. When they're not trying to hit military targets, they focus on civilian targets. More often than not, when I get to the site of the explosion, it turns out to be a bus station or a market with bodies lying in the street, or they try to hit water infrastructure or electricity. Up till now, they've generally held off hitting administration centres. Why is that? One reason may well be so as not to provoke the Russians for hitting their decision-making centres in Kiev. But of course, just over a week ago, we had the attack, presumably by Ukrainians, on the Kerch Bridge. And after that, Russia started hitting decision-making centres or widening their parameters of targets in the rest of Ukraine. So this strike here by Ukraine may well be a retaliation in turn for Russia's strikes, a sign here that this war is only going to escalate at the moment as Russia widens its parameters of targets, and Ukraine here in the city of Donetsk does the same.
The energy crisis continues to bite in Italy, and people from all walks of life have been staging rallies across the country. From students to workers, Italians are urging the next government to put the community back in the center of political discourse and work for peace. Our correspondent Max Civoli has a report.
On Saturday, anti-government rallies and protests were held in the Italian capital. In the morning, high school students took to the streets of Rome to stage a protest that converged on the education ministry. Pupils were demanding more investment in education after what they call 2 decades of budget cuts and the country recording the highest school dropout levels in the EU. They sent out a warning to the next government, saying Italian schools must be upgraded to be of quality standards.
We are still wondering why the government hasn't scrapped a 2015 school reform. We demand the next executive to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school and to declare a state of emergency for Italy's school buildings.
Later on Saturday, hundreds of people held a demonstration not far from the government building. The initiative was organized by a recently formed anti-system movement called Sovereign and Popular Italy. At the demonstration, people urged the next executive to do more to shield families and companies from surging energy prices and to stop sending weapons to Ukraine and find ways to promote peace internationally.
We want to stress how the lies told by the mainstream media on the conflict in Ukraine have brainwashed the Italian people. It's NATO who declared war on Russia using Ukraine as a tool. An end must be put on this historical phase made of imperialistic violence and the longing for expansion.
Our movement demands next government to pay in full for people's exorbitant bills and to review the country's foreign policy that is literally plunging our economy into chaos. But I am afraid the next executive will stick to the same line adopted by the outgoing Draghi government.
Italy is in the process to install a new government as the Mario Draghi government collapsed in July, leading to snap elections. The far-right formation Brothers of Italy has emerged as the party garnering the most support from Italians in the vote last month, and its leader Giorgia Meloni is slated to become Italy's next prime minister. More protests were held in Italy over the past days. Earlier this week, operations were suspended for 24 hours at Genoa Airport following a demonstration called by the Ansaldo Energy plant's employees against plans to close the factory. Also, the Italy's largest union, CGL, staged a large demonstration in Rome about a week ago, demanding more protection for workers. A hot autumn of protests and strikes seemed to have just started in the country. Max Civili, Rome.
Welcome back. Moving on with the rest of this newscast. Chinese president saying his government is committed to peaceful reunification with Taiwan, but might have to use force if necessary. Xi Jinping rejected any form of separatism and interference over the Sulphur Island that China considers as part of its territory. Beijing is strongly opposed to Washington's military ties with Taipei, calling the U.S. military presence in the region provocative. Xi also pointed out that Beijing is against a Cold War mentality in international politics and meddling in other countries' affairs. He also praised the current stable conditions in Hong Kong, which he said has made a transition from chaos to governance. He insisted that Hong Kong be ruled by patriots, reaffirming 22 legislation that bans non-patriots from positions of political power in the city. President Xi was addressing the five-yearly Congress of the ruling Communist Party. A big protest has been held in the besieged Gaza Strip following the Friday prayers to support Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. That amid an increase in Israeli violations against Palestinian people in the occupied Holy City. Ashraf Shannon has the details.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has held a big protest in the Gaza Strip to condemn the surge of Israeli attacks in Al-Quds and on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. People thronged the streets of the blockaded territory following the Friday prayer to take part in the event. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowed to stand with Al-Quds. In recent days, extremist Jewish settlers backed by Israeli forces have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds and asserted that armed resistance is the key to reaching freedom.
We condemn the Zionists' provocations in Al-Aqsa Mosque, and we salute the freedom fighters in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Today, we're entering a new era where armed resistance against Zionist occupiers is the strategic choice, not only in Gaza, but also in the occupied West Bank, Al-Quds, and everywhere in Palestine.
Protesters also expressed their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli aggression and attacks.
We came today to show our unwavering support for the armed resistance in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The Zionists are desecrating Al-Aqsa Mosque and they only understand the language of force.
Palestinians in Gaza have expressed their willingness to sacrifice their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. Occupied by Israeli forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for justice and freedom.
Al-Quds is the core of our struggle against the Zionist enemy, and we are willing to die in order to protect it. Zionist forces and settlers are desecrating Al-Aqsa, and we must escalate the resistance against the Zionist occupiers.
This is while Palestinians consider Al-Quds as the capital of a future Palestinian state. Palestinians here are calling for stepping up all forms of resistance against Israeli plots over Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
A U.S. House committee investigating the Capitol riot of January 6, 2021, has decided to subpoena ex-President Donald Trump. A few expect that Trump will ever testify, but the decision keeps the 2020 election unrest front and center for the next month midterms. Rami Mazahari reports from Chicago.
Less than 4 weeks before the United States midterm legislative elections, the committee investigating the election-related protests on January 6, 2021, announced that they will subpoena ex-President Donald Trump to testify. However, most analysts believe Trump will not ultimately testify, and his written response to the panel was noncommittal. Trump has reportedly been telling aides he favors testifying as long as it would be done in a live public hearing, but the commission isn't likely to agree to that. Almost 2 years after the presidential election, the country appears to be as divided as ever, with Trump supporters calling the subpoena an October surprise meant to influence the midterms, while anti-Trump partisans say the subpoena proves that not even an ex-president is above the law.
I think it's probably more divisiveness just because how long it's taken and just kind of puts back some old wounds, you know, some salt in those wounds. So I'm in favor of him. Even though I voted for him, I would rather him, if there was fault on whatever violence ensued, I think he needs to be held accountable.
The January 6th committee has been alternatively branded as a necessary defense of American-style democracy or as a staged show trial. What appears certain, however, is that it has had seemingly no effect on the American public. In poll numbers, which are virtually unchanged despite nearly 2 years of intense mainstream media focus on the committee, 35% of America still calls the events of January 6th a legitimate protest, while 50% of the country still calls it an insurrection.
I think it's important historically. I mean, we need to document all this information, whether it hasn't changed anybody's opinion or not. I think the record should show that we did our due diligence and looked into it, and we recorded this for historical reasons as well. So I think there'll be lessons learned in the future, perhaps others that will look at this, and there'll be some takeaways.
Over 60% of Republicans still believe the 2020 election was illegitimate. In 2017, polls showed that over 60% of Democrats still believed the 2016 election was illegitimate. America's political division did not begin on January 6, 2021, and it does not appear that the committee will fully unite the nation by voting day on November 8th. The news of the subpoena was announced on what many say was likely the commission's last public hearing. The final report is expected shortly after the elections. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
radio. Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 16th, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And in the beginning, I do apologize for my rough voice. And here I truly appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizano Rahman from Bangladesh, Paolo Duarte from the Philippines, and Helmut Metz from Germany. So, Mizano Rahman, Paolo, and Helmut, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and, of course, your program, Listeners Special. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card. And of course, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails. Here we've received an email from Bala Murali from India. Again, from India, we've received an email from Shivandupol, one of our old and regular listeners. From Brazil, we've received an email from Antonio Santos. From Canada, we have an email from Alan Willey, one of our old and regular listeners. And last but not the least is an email from Jacques Augustin from France. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And as I said, here we received an email from France from Jacques Augustin, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Jacques says. Dear friends, to begin this letter, I wish to thank you for the nice EQSL card and your kind message received last week. I'm glad to tell you I could listen to your radio despite a poor signal from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. I am pleased to submit my reception report to your consideration. I hope this report will be helpful to you. And if checked and found to be correct, can you send me the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran EQSL card as verification? In a broadcast heard, I paid much attention to the news and I wish America to lift economical sanctions against Iran. I conclude this letter wishing it has pleased you. And I would be glad to tune in again to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran and looking forward to hearing from you. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And thank you very much for sending this email to us, Jacques Augustin from France. You mentioned a poor signal from IRIB English Radio, but be sure that we will fix the problem. So please accept our electronic QSL card as verification. Jacques Augustin, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Wish you all the best. And from Brazil, we've received an email from Antonio Santos. Antonio Santos says, "Hello, friends. Greetings from Brazil. My name is Antonio Santos, and I live in Sao Paulo. I'm sending you a reception report, and I would like to get a paper QSL card by post from your radio. Special thanks. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Antonio Santos from Brazil. As you may know, sending any material, including paper QSL card on behalf of IRIB English Radio, is not possible in the time of pandemic. So for the time being, before this virus is eradicated all over the world, please accept our electronic QSL card. Wish you all the best. Welcome back. Bala Murali from India has sent us a message, a piece of email saying, "Dear staff, I'm writing to you after a long time. I hope you would be fine. I like your programs very much and your website too. And I especially like your news, photo galleries and videos. And I want your QSL card if possible. Thank you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Bala Murali from India, and please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations to you for writing this email, and thank you for your compliments. It shows your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and listeners special. As for your request about sending you a paper QSL card, as you may know, it's not possible. I mean, sending any material, including paper QSL card on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our great listeners around the world is not possible in the time of pandemic. So for the time being, please accept our eQSL card and or, you know, electronic QSL card as verification. We wish you all the best. Bala Murali from India. Thank you. And from Canada, we've received an email from Alan Vili. Alan Vili from Canada says, "Dear staff, once again, hello from Newfoundland, Canada. Here is another set of reception reports attached of IRIB shortwave broadcast as monitored here in Newfoundland during the past few weeks. I hope it would be of your help. With best regards from Canada." First of all, salam and greetings to you, Alan Willie from Canada, and please accept our appreciations to you for this email, for this great message. We wish you all the best. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Alan Willie from Canada. Welcome back, and here we have another email from India from Shivando Paul, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Shivando says. "Dear friends, greetings from India. I am Shivando Paul, and I am from India. I am a regular listener of IRIB English Radio, Now your reception is moderate, signal strength is good, but slight noise and overall reception is moderate. My hobby is radio, listening to the radio and collecting stamps, coin, QSL cards, program schedule, etc. Please send QSL card and other souvenir items of Iran. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings to you, Shivan Paul from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you for letting us know your views about the quality of our programs. As you said, the signal strength is good, but a slight noise and overall reception is moderate. Thank you for reflecting on that. And as your request for sending you paper QSL cards and souvenir items of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting, unfortunately, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio is not possible in the time of pandemic. So for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card. Thank you. Now, dear listeners, here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with us and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha
This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, His Holiness Muhammad and Prophet of Allah, peace be upon him, and his pure progeny has said, I leave among you the Thaghalain, the Book of Allah and my Itra. Verily, they will be inseparable from each other until they join up with me at the pool of Kauthar. It may imply droplets in an ocean of anything else which is incomprehensible by the intellect and understanding of human being. Moreover, the cruelty which these two divine trusts have suffered was also imposed on the Islamic nation and even the entire humanity. The transgression wrought by tyrants and their stooges defy description by pen. The concatenate hadith of Thaghalain has been quoted by both Shia and Sunni schools as a positive proof for mankind, especially for Muslims.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all over the world. You're listening to Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio, and this is your humble host, Zainab Mousavi. In this program, we will discuss and elaborate on Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi's viewpoints in regards to the station of the mother. In one of his speeches about the mother's role in training a proper progeny, Imam Khomeini says that the mother's service to the community is greater than that of the teacher. It is greater than all other services. And if we take a look at the history and we take a deeper look at the biography of the most influential and successful people in the world, we can see that most of them have been raised by wise and strong mothers, especially. You know, such mothers teach some moral concepts like responsibility, patience, self-confidence so appropriately to their children that you can see the consequences of such appropriate teachings in the future. Okay, for now, let's have a break and we will be back soon.
صلى الله عليه يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله.
The importance of the effects of mother's love and affection is one of the interpretations that we can have of Imam Khomeini's view. You know that some interesting point about these speeches is that Imam Khomeini, as the leader of a great nation and as a father of a family, had all these views about women.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Since Mohammed bin Salman became Saudi Arabia's crown prince in 2017, the kingdom has detained hundreds of activists and human rights defenders, as well as bloggers, academics, and others for their political activism, showing nearly zero tolerance for dissent, even in the face of international condemnation of the crackdown on these people. Muslim scholars, particularly Shiite clerics and human rights activists from the Shia communities, have been executed, and women rights campaigners have been imprisoned and tortured, as freedom of expression, relationship between groups and their beliefs continue to be denied by the Saudi authorities. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The English website of Fast News Agency reports, an international human rights organization warned against the appalling conditions of human rights in Saudi Arabia and the brutal forms of physical and mental torture that state authorities use against imprisoned political dissidents and pro-democracy campaigners. The European Saudi Organization for Human Rights said in a report that Saudi citizens are subject to all kinds of torture ever since they're arrested under trumped-up charges, and the torments do not stop even after rulings are passed and include the families and relatives of the detainees as well. The group added that Saudi officials carry out various types of mental and physical torture against the detainees who later face the death penalty. They are severely beaten and forcibly disappeared for long periods of time during detention. The European Saudi Organization for Human Rights went on to note that Saudi authorities make use of different methods of physical torture, including electric shocks, sleep deprivation, beatings, extraction of nails from fingers, and hanging from the feet to force the imprisoned activists into signing confessions. The human rights organization pointed to the case of Saudi teenager Mustafa al-Darwish, who was executed in June of 2021 and was forced to sign a confession under the threat of a retrial. Apart from physical torture, the European Saudi Organization for Human Rights has observed the use of psychological torture against a number of detainees, including threats to their families. Haider Al-Leif, a protester who was executed on 23rd of April 2019, was threatened that if he did not sign the confession, his wife would be summoned to prison to divorce him. According to the European Saudi Organization for Human Rights, detainees endure other brutal measures, such as deprivation of contact with their families and daily insults. In many cases, torture results in permanent disability, in injury, pain, coma, and loss of consciousness. The Saudi prisoners are denied the right to medical treatment. The report added that Munir al-Adam, a young man who was executed along with 36 other men on 23rd of April 2019, lost his hearing because of torture, and Abdullah al-Tarif, another young man who was executed in the same mass execution, was also tortured. Torture caused damage to Abdullah al-Tarif's spinal vertebrae, as well as deviation of his left eye, and other parts of his body were also harmed. Agence France-Presse explains more about the same story. A Saudi court of law has sentenced 10 Egyptian men for up to 18 years for trying to organize a remembrance event for the 1973 Arab-Israeli war between the Tel Aviv regime and a coalition of Arab states led by Egypt and Syria. Two relatives speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals said that the court found the men from Nubian ethnic group guilty of establishing a terrorist group. The Egyptian men were first arrested in October of 2019 for trying to organize the event. They were released without charge in December of that year, but were rearrested the following July. The relatives of the men said, "I have intense anger at the extreme injustice to which our people have been subjected." The relative said one man received an 18-year sentence, one was jailed for 16 years, two were jailed for 14 years, and the others for between 10 and 12 years. Human rights groups had previously campaigned for the men's release and denounced the proceedings against them as a travesty of justice. They said the men were being prosecuted for the peaceful exercise of their right to freedom of expression in trying to organize a community event. Activists said the men had been denied regular family contact and only allowed access to government-appointed lawyers, and that at least two of the men are elderly and in a state of poor health. The relative said three of the men are over 60 years old. Prominent human rights group, Cairo Institute for Human Rights Studies, in a Twitter post, denounced recent sentences as harsh. Democracy for the Arab World Now, a US-based advocacy organization, also said the rulings were unfair. The report comes amid Saudi Arabia's back-channel attempts to normalize diplomatic relations with the Israeli regime. The website of Middle East Eye covers the same story, but from a different angle. A group of human rights advocates voiced concern that the British government may be complicit in human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia, citing lack of clarity over what the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund supports in the kingdom. In a report published recently, some campaigners said that at a time when the human rights situation is deteriorating in Saudi Arabia, uncertainty about what the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund is supporting in the kingdom raises questions about whether Britain is bolstering institutions involved in the abuses. The report added that the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund, which has so far given £70 million to six Persian Gulf states, has been criticized by members of parliament and by human rights groups for leaving the public largely in the dark about how it is run and taxpayer money is spent. The latest report comes as women's rights are removed from a description of what the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund supports in Saudi Arabia, a week after Riyadh sentenced a Leeds University student and women's rights activist to 34 years in prison for following and retweeting the critics of the kingdom on Twitter. In June of last year, the British government published the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund's supports, saying it bolsters the strategic partnership and delivers mutual prosperity and security by supporting Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030 reforms across priority sectors in line with British values, including women's rights. But in the Saudi Arabia section of the news summary published on 26th of August, a week after Salma al-Shahab's 34-year prison sentence over her tweets made headlines, women's rights are no longer referenced at all. Lina al-Hathloul, head of monitoring and communications for the human rights group Al-Aqsa, said the newly published summary still doesn't provide clear and transparent answers, and questioned how the Persian Gulf Strategic Fund is supporting human rights in Saudi Arabia. Dana Ahmad, West Asia and Persian Gulf researcher at Amnesty International, described the fund extremely concerning, saying Saudi Arabia's dire human rights record of silencing dissenting voices, executing individuals and ruthlessly crushing basic human rights of citizens and residents needs to be thoroughly addressed.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith. And this hadith is about the virtue of using perfume. You know, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, his mannerisms, his actions, the way he walked, the way he talked, you know, the way he sat, the way he slept, all of these actions, all of his sayings, all of his actions, even the Prophet's silence, right, in response to the actions of other people, all of these things taken as a totality, you know, in the parlance of Islam, we call this the Sunnah of the Prophet. And we call this the Sunnah of the Prophet, and Muslims, you know, they emulate it, they try their best in their lives to follow his Sunnah, to follow his, you know, tradition. One of the traditions of the Prophet, one of his, you know, his habits, you could say, was that the Prophet, he loved to use perfume, and you know, he would often, you know, use perfume and encourage others to use it. Many hadiths have been narrated, regarding, you know, this, the virtue of using perfume. In one hadith, we read the following. The Prophet said, "He who perfumes himself for Allah Most High, you know, for the sake of Allah, because Allah told him to do so, will be raised on the day of resurrection, smelling more fragrant than sweet musk." Right? So the effect of this is that if we perfume ourselves in this world, you know, in the hereafter, when we are raised from the grave, we will be raised smelling very nicely. Whereas he who perfumes himself for other than Allah, meaning for an unlawful purpose, let's say that, you know, there's a woman, she perfumes herself and goes outside in order to attract, you know, the glances of, you know, other men, right, who are, you know, non-mahram men. And this is something unlawful and incorrect. What will happen to such a person? This person will be raised on the day of resurrection, smelling more putrid than a corpse. Right? So perfuming oneself for the sake of God, you know, it has this effect. And then conversely, somebody who does this for an unlawful reason, right, it has this otherworldly, you know, evil effect, this negative effect. In one tradition has been related that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam never used to refuse perfume when he was gifted it. If somebody came to the Prophet and gifted him, you know, a bottle of perfume or something like, you know, some sort of perfume, the Prophet would always accept it as a gift. So, you know, this kind of indicates, you know, the importance of smelling nice for other people, and, you know, smelling good is something, a sunnah of the Prophet, and we should all, you know, emulate the Prophet in this regard. In fact, Imam Ali alayhi salam has also been reported to have said, "Perfume is an amulet," meaning it's a remedy. It kind of, you know, protects us from ailments, protects us from, you know, evil occurrences that might occur for us. And this is, again, this is something that indicates the recommendation of you.